Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pacific Basin's 2016 interim results earnings call. As mentioned, my name is Mats Berglund, CEO, and I'm joined by our CFO, Andrew Broomhead. I will start with an overview of our results and business activities before Andrew talks you through the financials. I will then invite you to ask any questions you may have. Turn to slide two. In extraordinary weak market conditions, dry bulk market freight rates fell to record low levels early in the year, which impacted our results. We made a net loss of $49.8 million and a positive operating cash flow of $7.7 million in the first half of the year. Our combination of ships and cargoes to achieve maximum utilization enabled us to generate average Handysize and Supramax daily TCE earnings that again significantly outperformed the Handysize and Supramax indexes. We completed a one-for-one rights issue in June, raising new capital of $143 million net, and as of June 30, we had cash and deposits of $406 million in the bank. We consider the rights issue to have been an equitable way to strengthen our balance sheet and liquidity position in a year when we are repaying $230 million of convertible bonds and when issuing a new convertible bond would have been very expensive for the company. We already repaid $106 million of convertible bonds in April and expect to repay another $124 million in October. The new rights issue capital enhances not only our ability to navigate the protracted challenging environment, but also our ability to attract cargo and to carefully assess and potentially purchase secondhand vessels at low prices. We remain focused on safe and cost-efficient operations and scale benefits, which have contributed to a further reduction in both our daily Handysize vessel operating costs and shoreside G&A expenses compared to last year. Our limited remaining towage activity is focused in the Middle East. Our remaining tugs and barges have a net book value of about $18 million and continue to be marketed for sale. Our towage disposals in the year to date have generated cash proceeds of $12 million. Turn to slide three. Our Handysize and Supramax daily TCE earnings of about $6,100 and $5,900 per day outperformed the Handysize and Supramax spot market indexes by 56% and 29% respectively. The market for Supramax vessels was especially weak, resulting in our average Supramax rates unusually falling below our Handysize rates. This has since normalized, with current Supramax TCEs now back above Handysize levels. As at 27th July, we had covered 58% of our Handysize days for the second half of 2016 at about $7,700 per day and 65% of our Supramax days at about $8,000 per day. Slide four. Unlike the Capesize and Panamax segments, our Handysize and Supramax segments are diverse in terms of cargoes, customers, and geography. This, together with our global office network and high-quality fleet of substitutable ships, enables us to combine cargoes and achieve over 90% of all our days at sea with cargo and less than 10% in ballast. This is how we generate our TCE premium, which represents a significant earnings advantage when multiplied across our large fleet. The trades in which these geared ships are deployed are operationally intense, and having skilled people and operational expertise really makes a difference. Our average Handysize and Supramax TCE premium over the past 5 years is about $2,400 and $1,800 per day respectively. Slide five. Baltic dry bulk freight market indexes declined in early 2016 to new record lows for all bulk carrier types, which in February all recorded TCE earnings of less than $3,000 per day. That is below cash operating expenses, and conditions are estimated to have been as poor as those of the early 1970s, some 45 years ago. Rates were undermined mainly by a general seasonal and Chinese New Year slowdown in demand, lingering oversupply of dry bulk tonnage, and lower Chinese imports of coal. Increased activity after mid-February supported improved market freight rates. The improvement was more notable in the Atlantic, where key drivers included strong exports of long-haul South American agricultural products. China has also been resilient, with continued high levels of steel exports and bauxite and copper concentrate imports. Rates have improved a bit further since mid-year, partly due to an unexpected recovery in Chinese coal imports. But it is important to note that market freight rates remain historically low and below P&L break-even levels. Slide 6. Clarkson Plotto now value a benchmark secondhand Handysize at $9.3 million, which is down 28% since a year ago. A new building is rated at $19.5 million, down 8% since last year. Note that the value difference between Japanese and Chinese-built ships remains significant. Values have stabilized, though, recently on improved market sentiment. The all-time large gap between new building and secondhand prices continues to discourage new ship ordering activity, which will benefit freight market fundamentals in the longer term. Slide 7. Minor bulk is not so minor. Analysts often focus on iron ore and coal and the fact that the long-term outlook for those segments is challenging. However, the cargoes we focus on, minor bulks and grain, together represents 48% of global dry bulk volumes and are still expected to grow, albeit at lower pace than before. Minor bulk demand is less dependent on China and has a more diversified geographical cargo and customer profile. As mentioned, this allows for the combination of trades to achieve higher laden utilization, which is exactly our strategy and how we can deliver value over average market earnings. Slide 8. Global dry bulk demand statistics for the first half are unfortunately not yet available. We do, however, have data on Chinese imports. Chinese dry bulk imports, representing about 30% of global demand, increased 7% year-on-year, driven mainly by improvement in iron ore and coal imports compared to the weak first half of 2015. An increasing percentage of the steel produced in China is exported, and China's exports of steel grew 9%. Chinese imports of seven key minor bulks increased by 5 million tons in the first half, or 4% year-on-year. Slide 9. All-time low freight earnings encouraged 1.8% of existing dry bulk capacity to be scrapped in the first quarter. That's the highest level of scrapping in over 30 years. Scrapping slowed in the second quarter, and in the half year overall, shipowners opted to delete 2.8% of total dry bulk capacity. New ordering for most dry bulk ship types was very small in the first half, with new orders substantially limited to 30 Valemax ore carriers dedicated to Vale's own iron ore export trades and primarily built to replace an aging fleet of large ore carriers, many of them old converted VLCCs. For the first time since the 1980s, we observed a meaningful number of vessels withdrawn from the market early in the year for short-term idling or longer-term layup. There has been minimal net growth in the dry bulk fleet overall since the seasonal surge in new ship deliveries in January. Turn to slide 10. New ship deliveries in the first half represented 3.6% of existing dry bulk capacity. That's a record shortfall of 52% compared to the scheduled order book for the period, and full year deliveries are projected also to fall significantly short. In view of the continued order book shortfall and slippage, We expect new ship deliveries in the full year of 2016 to be similar to last year's 49 million deadweight tons. We expect the absence of new ordering to result in significantly reduced new ship deliveries from next year onwards. These positive supply-side reactions to the challenging market will contribute to a healthier market in time. In slide 11, we show Clarksons Plato's yearly demand and supply levels combined in one chart. They estimate dry bulk demand in 2015 to have marginally contracted year-on-year, with a forecast for modest growth in  2016 and further year-on-year improvements in 2017 and 2018. Key drivers of the demand improvement include a healthy outlook for minor bulks and continued growth in long-haul grain shipments. With lower, if any, fleet growth in 2017 and 2018, the supply and demand balance should improve. I will revert with a wrap-up, but now hand you over to Andrew, who will present the financials. Andrew.
Good afternoon. Slide 12. The group reported an underlying loss of $61.6 million due to a record low weak first half dry bulk market. The loss attributable to shareholders of $49.8 million was impacted by $13.7 million of non-cash mark-to-market income, mainly on our bunker swaps, which are used to hedge our fuel exposure on forward cargo cover, and a $1.9 million book loss from the sale of towage assets. Slide 13. Analyzing our dry bulk results, our Handysize revenue days decreased by 12%, while our Supramax days increased by 39%. The record low first half dry bulk market brought down the achieved TCE earnings of both our Handysize and Supramax vessels. Handysize TCE earnings decreased 23% to $6,080 per day and outperformed the market by 56%, whilst blended daily cost reduced by 8%. This resulted in Handymax contributing a loss of $30.2 million. Our Supramax TCE earnings decreased by 37% to $5,910 per day and outperformed the market by 29%. The blended daily cost reduced by 24% as we chartered in more short-term vessels at more favorable rates. The overall Supramax contribution was a loss of $6.8 million. Slide 14. Handysize blended operating costs at $7,300 per day decreased 8% compared to 2015 due to both improved cost efficiencies for owned vessels as well as improved costs for chartered vessels as we have redelivered expensive time charter vessels. The proportion of owned to chartered vessel days increased to 54% compared with 2015. The breakout graph shows the different charter daily costs split between short-term, long-term, and index charters. Slide 15. We continue to make use of a significant proportion of short-term vessels which are able to make a good contribution to our service and our results even in the weak market. Supramax blended operating costs of $6,370 per day decreased 22% compared to 2015, which is due to significantly lower charter-in vessel rates, which dropped to $5,750 per day. Our owned vessel OpEx increased by 4% due to a few one-off repairs and maintenance costs. For both Handysize and Supramax, our daily overheads reduced 9% to $680 per day, reflecting the focus on reducing our costs of doing business. Slide 16. Our owned fleet includes 70 delivered Handysize vessels with an average book value of $15.9 million and an average age of 9.4 years, and 16 delivered Handymax vessels with an average book value of $22 million and an average age of 7.4 years. At the end of June, cash and deposits had increased to 406 million, with a net borrowing position of 466 million, giving a net gearing of 29%, which had reduced from 35% at the end of last year, due primarily to the repayment of convertible bonds and the capital raise via the rights issue. We remain in compliance with our loan covenants. We maintain as a KPI that net gearing should remain below 50%. Slide 17. We have $237 million of CapEx commitments spread over the coming 12 months. This will be funded by our remaining undrawn Japanese export credit facilities of $238 million, with a further $34 million of other secured borrowing facilities that we will draw down. In October 2016, we expect the put of the $124 million 2018 convertible bonds, based on all bondholders exercising their right to redeem the bonds at 100% of the principal amount. This is to be funded from the recent rights issue proceeds. Slide 18. The group generated operating cash flows of $8 million for the period and raised $143 million of cash after expenses through the rights issue. As well, we received $14 million of cash proceeds from towage sales and other non-core assets. CapEx of $48 million during the period included vessel payments for one handysize delivered during the period and installments for another four handysize and three Supramax new buildings. Our net decrease in borrowings of $55 million reflects the 2016 CB principal repayment of $106 million, net repayments of $22 million of bank borrowings and revolving facilities, and drawdown of $73 million under our Japanese export credit facilities for four delivered new builds during late 2015 and the first half of 2016. The overall result was an increase in our cash balance to $406 million at the period end. And now I would like to hand back to Mats.
Thank you, Andrew. To wrap up slide 19, the first half of 2016 saw extraordinarily weak dry bulk market conditions, but increased activity since February has supported improved market freight rates, and the very negative sentiment of earlier this year has tempered in recent weeks. For the market to improve further, it's important that scrapping remains at high levels, and our industry must scrap older ships and ships of poor design. They are not making any money in this market, and it is not worth investing further in such ships by way of expensive dry dockings and the retrofitting of new ballast water treatment systems. They should go for scrap to shrink the oversupply. This ongoing scrapping, practically no new ship ordering, and a shrinking order book will together lead to a gradually healthier supply-demand balance. But the timing of a more substantial recovery is hard to predict, and we are managing the company for a continued weak market in the medium term. We are driving further cost savings, conducting our business efficiently and safely, and continuing to work hard on combining ships and cargoes to maximize our utilization and margins. We are not entering into any new long-term charters, relying instead on our growing fleet of owned and low-cost short-term chartered-in ships. Our cash position, the successful rights issue, our robust business model, and our solid track record in terms of service delivery and high vessel utilization all contribute to the strong corporate profile that sets us apart as a preferred, strong, reliable, and safe partner for customers and other stakeholders. We are well positioned to navigate this extremely weak market and to benefit from a cyclical upturn when it comes. Thank you for listening. And I now invite you to ask any questions. Thank you.
We're now to begin our question and answer sections. If you have a question for today's speaker, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now and you will enter a queue. After you announce it, please ask your question. If you find that your question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, please press 02 to cancel the questions. So once again, 01 on your telephone keypad now to ask a question. Our first question is Jeff Chen from BNP.
Hi, thanks Max and Andrew. I have two questions. One is I didn't see any impairment charges for this first half. I'm wondering if you've already done the test and the auditor suggests no need or is still pending operation. And secondly, you mentioned about the China dry bulk and, you know, remaining resilient. I'm wondering if you see signs of any impact from the supply side reform, particularly probably on the steel side. You know, the government has been quite committed to cut the capacity. Do you expect, you know, from the demand side, it would have some impact to your business? Thanks.
Andrew, on the impairment.
Yes, thank you. So with the impairments, the auditors look at impairments every reporting period if there is an indication. So so we went through that process, and as at the year end when we announced our annual results, there is no impairment, which principally comes down to the business model that we have. Thank you.
The second question was that about Chinese
reforms.
Chinese reforms and the effect on the market. Well, I mean, China has been resilient as regards demand, especially, you know, not in the first quarter, but in the second quarter and more recently, right? You know, both coal imports and iron ore imports have been, I would say, surprisingly high recently. The coal is due to, as you probably know, to capacity restrictions, and where they only allow the coal mines to run for part-time and not 24/7, and that has resulted in imports. But the long-term trend we see there is more positive for grain and the minor bulks that we are focusing on than coal and iron ore. They continue to import a lot of iron ore, but they use less domestically, and that's positive for the shipping segment, since we're getting the seaborne movements in both ways, so to speak. The exports is going in smaller ships, Supramaxes and Panamaxes, and that you know, volumes of steel exports have remained high. The reforms as regards supply side, scrapping incentives and so on, is not really affecting our market or the international market so much. It's more, you know, Chinese flag ships, coastal ships and so on that are being scrapped, or ships that are controlled by the government controlled companies, which are the big ships, Capesize and so on, not really competing with our market. Hopefully that's an answer to your question. Next question, please.
Next question is King Chen from Daiwa Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Matt, Andrew. Thanks for taking my question. Just on the outperformance, just looking at the compared against the first quarter. The first quarter number was higher, and I guess first half dropped from there. So it implies second quarter was a bit weaker. Just wondering whether you had any comments on the outperformance.
Yeah, I would say the main reason for that is the development of the market, where we had, you know, a real deep freight market in mid-February, and we've since seen an improvement. But you know, we're fixing forward, right? So the fixtures that we do today do not hit the P&L until, you know, 30 to 60 days forward. So in a falling market, right, when we're comparing our actual earnings with the index, we benefit from having fixed ships earlier in the higher market, and our outperformance looks a bit bigger, if you understand what I mean. When the market then goes up again, we have the opposite effect. So probably outperformance in the first quarter is somewhat overstated because of what I just said, and somewhat understated in the second quarter. I hope you understand the timing effect, right? You're fixing forward, but we're comparing with the index on the day, so to speak, right? So it's not 100% apples to apples. But over time, our premium has been, you know, over the last 5 years, $2,400 per day on handy size.
Okay, I see. Understand. No, I get the idea. And on the same vein, in terms of the outperformance, maybe it's a hypothetical question, but in terms of, you know, scrapping and just general survival of the better quality names of in the shipping industry, just wondering whether that would, you know, in the future, if say all things go well, you know, there's net scrapping, you know, poor companies drop out of the industry, would that would lead to a better spot market in terms of freight rates, but would it also, you know, potentially reduce the premiums that you earn in terms of, you know, your competitive edge? I suppose in this market is quite strong, but as the, you know, as the weaker players drop out, I guess your edge becomes less apparent. So would there be some sort of netting off effect in the sense that, you know, freight rates go up but your premiums drop?
Well, you know, if freight rates go up, our premium tends to shrink a little bit, but and as I mentioned, the opposite thing happens when the market goes down. But I don't think there will be the effect that you just described. You know, our premium is built by many components. The biggest one is achieving more than 90% laden percentage and very little time in ballast. And to achieve that, you need all the components of our business model. That is a large fleet of substitutable ships, very good people with relationships, cargo contracts, to combine cargoes in and out. You need the international office network. You won't get these cargoes unless you have representation on all the six continents. It takes scale and all these various components, but it's also having the best ships, right? You know, almost all our ships are Japanese. All our ships are logs fitted. Every ship can do every cargo. You know, it's tough to achieve what we achieve if you don't have all the components of this business model. And I don't think that will necessarily change by freight rates going up.
Okay, understood. Just one more question on the secured borrowings against the pledged. Just wondering, just noticing a trend, I suppose, in terms of the, you know, I guess the bank borrowings require a higher collateral value. Just comparing sort of, you know, first half 2015 numbers versus end of 2015 versus June 2016. Is that a trend that you can comment on, you know, whether it's because maybe sort of your fleet is getting older, so naturally, you know, banks require, I guess, you know, high collateral value because your book value, there's less impairments there. Any comments on around that sort of, you know, secured borrowings?
Thanks. I mean, we, in relation to the secure borrowings, there are covenants in relation to the proportion of value that needs to cross a threshold level of the drawn net of repayments borrowing. So as time passes, loans amortize, which means you need a lower level of asset value as security because the loan has been repaid. So that comes down. You know, in terms of, you know, the specifics, then I think the most important thing is that, you know, we are in compliance with our loan covenants, and the key loan covenant is the loan to value, since we do not have interest rate covenants. So that should give you comfort that our position is enhanced, particularly after the rights issue, which has strengthened the balance sheet overall. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Just Just a follow-up on Jeff's question about the auditor review. So is it fair to say, I suppose, they only, I guess, do an audit once a year?
No, they do it. They do a review at the interims, so the auditors go through the process and do the similar work that is done at the year end. So that has no impact on whether or not there is an impairment.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
So I understand we should go to online questions. Question from Greg Knoller, Asia editor, IHS Market Fair Play. So the pretty similar question to what we had before, if we're happy with the level of scrapping. I think scrapping was very good in the first quarter, but slowed in the second quarter, as we mentioned. Overall, for the six-month period, I would say we can't complain on the scrapping level, right? There was 2.8%, or you know, just below 6%, if that is kept up for the full year. You know, it slowed a bit in the second quarter. It seasonally does so, partly because of the monsoon and you know, weather reasons in the scrapping areas. But it goes a bit up and down, right? With freight rates as well. I think it's very important to emphasize that it's rational to scrap not only old ships but poor quality ships as well. And you know, if you don't have any money, scrap the ship to get some more cash that you need to repay the newer ships you have. If you do have money, still scrap the old or poor ships and buy a younger one. It's the arbitrage is very attractive. It's a very good time now to trade up. You know, the second, you know, 5-year-old ships, 3-year-old ships, 7-year-old ships are often more efficient. And you can still buy them very, very all-time low today and take the opportunity to trade up, and you help the market improve at the same time, so to speak. That's a rational and attractive arbitrage. We don't have any 20-year-old ship. Our oldest ship is 16 years old soon or something. But it's something that we may also look at doing, right? So it's just not a good idea to order a new ship today. It's a much better idea, if you're going to invest in dry bulk, to buy a second-hand ship. And that should lead to more scrapping. You also have you know, timings coming up with the ballast water treatment system regulations that will kick in. And you also have your dry dockings, and if the ship is poor, you're not going to spend $1 million to replace steel, etc. You got to scrap it. So I think scrapping will remain at good levels, and with the very little, if no, ordering that we have at the moment, it will gradually tighten up. Next question. What was the average number of ballast days per ship for the Handy and Supra fleets in Q1 and Q2? How did this compare to 2015? We do not disclose that level of detail, but I can confirm that our laden days, so we count all the days at sea, right? And more than 90% of those were laden, and less than 10% were in ballast. And that was about flat between 15 and the first half 16. So we are not seeing reduced utilization rate with our business model and our people and relationships and offices. We keep our ships equally well employed. It's the market rates that affect the lower earnings, and not worse utilization. Next question is premium earning versus the index were 83% and 61% in Q1, but only 56% and 29% in the first half, implying a fall in the second quarter. Why the fall? So I think the same answer as we mentioned before, right? That there's a timing effect here where we fix forward about, you know, 30 to 60 days. So if we fix a voyage today, we may not load it until in a couple of weeks' time, right? And then it hits the the earnings over that voyage time period that can be, you know, everything from 30 to 50 days long, etc. But we compare with today's index. So when the market is going down, our earnings tends to expand and maybe be somewhat overstated. And when the market turns around, which it did in the second quarter, right, rates have improved. And that's the reason for why we're showing a lower premium. But I think you should look at this over time. And, you know, the premium over the 6 months period is very solid, and we expect it to continue to be good. But you know, if market rates continue to go up, you should expect you know, a slight compressing of that margin, and the reverse if rates go down. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much again for your interest in the company and for taking the time to listen and attend. Thank you very much.